On today's College Football Inquirer, a former Nebraska athletic director writes a book and has some bombshell claims. Create a very interesting alternate history if his plan to return Nebraska to the Big 12 had actually happened. And also, if his plan to maybe hire a coach other than Scott Frost had actually happened. We'll talk about that. We also will talk about the Pac-12 dropping its schedule with an idea that every other conference should follow. We'll be talking that and more on today's College Football Inquirer. This is the College Football Inquirer with Ross Dellinger and Stephen Godfrey. I am Andy Staples, and I have been up reading. Gentlemen, I don't get to read the whole book last night, Andy. I did not read Bill Moose's entire 697-page book, though I am going to go back and read the beginning of it, because there's some nuggets in there that I picked up reading the later parts of his life that I need to know what happened early in the life. And this is, so Bill Moose, for those who don't know, former Nebraska athletic director, former Washington State athletic director, former Oregon athletic director, actually was presided over Oregon Mike Bellotti years when they started getting good at football, and then hired Mike Leach at Washington State. And of course, his last tenure was at Nebraska. That's the part we're going to talk about. From the Crab Creek Chronicles, from the wheat fields to the ball fields and beyond. That's the name of his book.
Even the title needs an editor.
Yeah, he's an editor. Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Okay, this is true. 697 pages, probably a little bit lengthy.
Probably.
But the man's a hell of a storyteller.
Is he Stephen King?
prolific, but the man is a hell of a storyteller. And now, granted, this is one person's side of these events, but after reading it, where Nebraska is in the world right now makes a lot more sense to me, because we always talk on this show about alignment and about everybody at a school pulling in the same direction.
Culture.
We just got done watching Indiana go to a national title after being pretty much the worst program in college football forever. And a lot of that, you've heard Kurt Cignetti say, is that the administration fully supported me. They gave me everything I needed, that sort of thing. This is interesting just because it does examine some of the dysfunction at Nebraska. But what I want to talk about more than anything is his claim. And I'm pretty sure if we talk to the other people involved, they would back this up. He sought out Bob Bowlesby, then the commissioner of the Big 12. And this is in 2021. This is right after the pandemic. So there's a late 2020, 2021.
Okay.
And discussed the idea of Nebraska returning to the Big 12 from the Big 10. And the pitch was it would be Nebraska and maybe somebody else, probably Colorado, which, as we know, did go back to the Big 12. And here's my question to you guys, because this idea got squelched, as it should have, by Nebraska's Board of Regents. They were like, no. I guess all but two said, no, we're staying in the Big Ten. But had this happened, would it have changed or slowed down the realignment? Would it have turned the clock back toward the way things used to be? Because remember, this is a Big 12 that still had Texas and Oklahoma in it.
Yeah, but in 21, you said? We know
it was 20. It was like late 20.
It was 20 because it was after the Big 10 canceled the football season.
Yes, it was a lot of it was Nebraska people and Bill Moose specifically being very upset with the way the Big 10 handled the pandemic.
But that's not what I'm asking. That's not why I'm asking. I'm asking because I think, and Ross, I'm sure you were there on the ground when this happened, the wheels were already in motion for certainly the Red River defection to the SEC. At that point, those conversations were already occurring.
Yeah, I wouldn't think it would have impacted that from happening. You know, just because Nebraska rejoined, I don't think that Texas and Oklahoma were going to stick around.
Also, Nebraska,
another reason why Nebraska did the right thing by not entertaining.
Yes, and Nebraska also
it was like a
was going to say, they left the Big 12 initially because of Texas.
Right.
So I don't think that would have had any bearing on Texas's decision and Oklahoma's as well to go to the SEC for more money
right.
and all the other reasons that they did.
Right, right.
Because right. it's interesting to me because I see fans ask me this all the time. They'll say, why doesn't Nebraska just go back to the Big 12? They're not competing in the Big 10. And my answer is you can't. Like it would be incredibly stupid for them to do that. They're in the league that makes the most money.
Yes.
They're in the league that gives you the biggest platform. You can't go back.
What's interesting to me is not that should they have gone back, because the answer is no. In fact, I would pose the question, if you invited any school in the sub two, the ACC or the Big 12 right now, to a power conference, eventually they would say yes. There might be some hemming and hawing, which is a legal term.
There would be no hemming. Right. I don't even think there'd be any hemming and hawing. I think okay. they would just say yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there really is no debate whether they should or should not have gone back. Like once you're in because of a financial stake, because there's just simply too much money to turn down. Now, what's interesting to me here is that this is maybe the first of its kind where you have an administrator, a person who really had their hand on that move, right? Someone who was involved mm-hmm. in it. Say that this wasn't good. Admit that this was not particularly beneficial to the member institution. What we've seen so far is a lockstep alignment of universities, athletic directors, school presidents, et cetera, talking about these somewhat, you know, fugazi benefits to their university suddenly joining a 29 member Big Ten or whatever it is, you know, or in a more extreme example, you know, the leadership at a place like Cal or Stanford saying, oh, the ACC is great for us, and here's why. What you're seeing now is enough time has elapsed and this individual has obviously left the profession to say, I don't know if this is good for Nebraska. I think it wasn't. I think that's we've bared that out over the years of results on the field. And yet we couldn't do anything else.
Well, I also think there's a really interesting part where he gets the job and he gets a phone call. And it's Jim Delaney, the commissioner of the Big Ten. And this is, Bill Moose says, this is what Jim Delaney says to him right after getting the job. Nebraska needs to get back to being Nebraska. This is the commissioner of the Big Ten telling him this in 2017. Like, part of it is not that Nebraska has failed in the Big Ten or that the Nebraska is a poor fit for the Big Ten, because I actually don't think Nebraska is a poor fit for the Big Ten. I think culturally, they fit very well with the Big Ten. The problem is Nebraska hasn't been good at football. And until Nebraska is good at football, the rest of the Big Ten will never fully accept Nebraska. It will always feel weird. And they need to figure that out. Now, this book, the two chapters about Nebraska, give you some pretty good clues as to why they've been bad at football.
Yes.
Yeah, debacle.
Yeah,
I mean, like the opposite of alignment.
Yeah, you don't know who's really in charge. He's always talking about the system president versus the campus chancellor and who's actually in charge, and they're kind of going at each other. And it's interesting to me because I'm not going to relitigate the hiring of Scott Frost. We all thought
Why
that
not?
Was a good hire. Every one of us thought that was a good hire.
Yeah, but it wasn't.
Apparently, except for Bill Moose's
wife, like a home
did not
run.
Think it was a good hire.
But it absolutely wasn't.
That was...
Yeah, we should have a mea culpa. I think we don't have to relitigate whether they were going to do it. And Andy, I think it answers the first question you're asking. Why was Nebraska bad at football? Because at least according to this individual, who was the person ostensibly tasked with making the hire, he said he had no other choice, basically. From the excerpts of this autobiography that I've read, there was so much pressure on him from Nebraska boosters and alumni to bring the native son home, even though he, as an athletic administrator, saw someone who was not ready for the job yet, who was emotionally immature, who was professionally immature, talks about how he showed up for the interview kind of unprepared and scruffy in a pair of sweatpants. And yet the clamor, we all remember this at the time, the clamor to bring Scott Frost home as the chosen one was something that Moose couldn't fight. So what does that say about Nebraska and college athletics? This is why the sport is unique. Is it this raving mob with pitchforks said, bring our guy home.
Yeah.
And the people who are actually in charge and experts said, hey, guys, this he's not ready. He's too young. He doesn't display a lot of key traits here. All you're looking at is the fact that he was a quarterback on our team and he's from here.
And his team's good now.
And yeah,
there was one line
for like
too,
a hot second.
I think it was just, I think it was in the basketball search, right? Where he was maybe pursuing Dana Altman and hired Fred Hoiberg, where like one of the board members apparently told him, Nebraskans will not accept Dana Altman.
Basically just said flat out, no, you can't go get him. It's and now look, the Hoiberg hire has worked out great. But Dana Altman at the time, if he'd come from Oregon to Nebraska, that would have been considered a massive coup. And so it is fascinating to learn, like, and every, to your point, Godfrey, about how college sports is different from everything else, everybody's structure is different. Every government structure is different. In the state of Nebraska, the board members are elected. They're not appointed by the governor. As they are,
there's
in
only
most
like
states.
Five or six states, I think, that are like that. Michigan's another one. We've talked about the Michigan board quite a bit over this past fall, and they're elected as well. But that gives them a little more. I feel like if you're an elected board member, you feel like you have more power, and you certainly feel like you have more responsibility because you want to be elected again, right? Just like any other politician.
I have found myself lately when I do local radio, mainly in the South, but just, you know, in general, when I go on a city, there ends up being a comparison to consistently underperforming NFL teams and consistently underperforming prestige college programs. And really, you can have a long-winded conversation, various pieces of context, what's going on locally. It boils down to this. In the NFL, you got to deal with one bad booster, and that's the person who owns the team. Because it's really hard to be consistently bad at the professional level.
And if that booster's bad, you're screwed.
Yeah. Shout out to the
Arizona
Haslams.
Cardinals.
Haslams. No reason. I'm just going to say that.
The Browns. Yep.
Yeah. However, the problem that compounds the issue in college football is sometimes you have 50, 20, 15, and in some cases only five or six, but it's actually worse when they're at odds with each other and they don't have anything officially on a piece of paper that says, hey, I own this franchise, which is actually kind of even worse. They wax and wane with their check writing and their support and their influence. They use state political means, you know, they influence particular boards, however every particular university is set up. And that's what's so headache inducing about college sports. The short answer, I feel like everybody's done a long form piece in the last 10 years. Like, what happened to Nebraska? Why? How come Nebraska can't do the all this kind of stuff? And it goes back to like, well, you know, they're not jacked up on steroids in the strength and conditioning room in the 70s like they used to be. And, you know, you don't have Lawrence Phillips and eight farm boys running the single wing. But Nebraska
triple
is
option, sir.
Nebraska is the problem. Nebraska is Nebraska's problem and has been consistently for years. Go back to the Bo Pelini stuff. Like, the dude got taped. He got taped complaining about the program by rogue. Yes. If that would have happened in Alabama, there'd have been a body in a creek. Okay?
Yeah.
Y'all know this. So the reason why I think this is newsworthy is that Moose came out and said, I don't think this was going to work for Nebraska. We had to do it. It was the financial move to make. And ultimately, we're probably worse for it, if not also richer and more and still relevant. But it doesn't mean that expanding into power leagues and eventually the Super League is going to be good, even for the creme de la creme, even for the legacy brands of this sport.
Well, but the thing is, Nebraska could have fixed this. And again, I'm not relitigating the hire of Scott Frost, but I'm going to point out, and I'm not saying I knew this, but I'm also not paid to know this. I'm not a search firm person. I'm not an AD. Kurt Cignetti was out there to hire when they hired Scott Frost. Kurt Cignetti was out there to hire when they hired Matt Rhule.
Yeah, but I mean, no one was going to do that at the time.
Dan Lanning was out there to hire.
Sure.
All of those people were out there. They just had to, choose to do it.
That little refrain has come up a bunch since the national championship. So what, like a month, less than a month? We're going to drive ourselves insane. Nobody was going to hire Kurt Cignetti. Okay, this was a pronounced sea change in the market.
But that's a symptom of the problem. Is
Dan Lanning? You're right about Andy. Yes, like Dan Lanning, the Matt Rhule hire.
Now it would have been not Dan Lanning from Oregon. Not when they hired Rhule, you would have had to hire Dan Lanning, defensive coordinator.
Right. Georgia
young
defensive
Memphis
coordinator.
Defensive coordinator. Yeah. I think Dan Lanning. So. Yeah.
Well, that he was no younger. And I guarantee. Look, I met Dan Lanning when he was at Georgia, and I met Scott Frost when he was at Oregon, and they are miles apart. At that point, I interviewed the first time I remember really interviewing Frost was after the national championship game when they lost at Oregon against Ohio State in 14 and thinking, no, this guy's like way too immature. The dude's Cobra Kai. Like everything that happened with Scott Frost, there were warning signs. But just because the guy's an alumnus, this is a great story of having blinders on and thinking about the colors of the team instead of the actual function of the football program. But you don't want me to relitigate the hire.
Well, I love Moose's wife in the interview with Frost basically turning to him and saying, you can't possibly hire this guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, she said he's not ready.
Not ready, immature.
Now, Moose had actually gone to Chip Kelly before that, which that was in that cycle, if we remember, Florida goes to Chip Kelly and offers him the job. UCLA goes to Chip Kelly and offers him the job. So now we know Nebraska came to him about the same time and about that same week and talked to him in New Hampshire. And I thought Chip Kelly made the right choice between the two that I knew of at the time. When he chose between Florida and UCLA, I think he showed a deep knowledge of himself by taking UCLA, because he would have been fired at Florida within 2 years. Because he would not recruit aggressively enough for Florida's taste. Think about it. Dan Mullen got the job. Mm-hmm. He got run out for the same reason, but he was several degrees more aggressive in recruiting than Chip Kelly was at UCLA.
And he wouldn't have worked in Nebraska either.
No. Florida and Nebraska, same situation, basically.
Yes, probably worse, well, honestly.
Yeah, in fact, worse. Yeah, worse situation, right? Because you've got to actually get on a plane to recruit as opposed to Florida, where you could drive to many of the recruits that you're after. There was something else in the, I did not read the whole book, but I did read a pretty long summary of it, and it by the Omaha World Herald, and it sort of spotlighted six highlights of the book, and obviously the basketball search and the football search were two of the six, and then the conference realignment where he met with Bob Bowlesby and all that, and then there was one where I think within his first year on the job, where he got pulled into the president and chancellor's office and basically told, you're an alcoholic and you have to go to rehab.
Right.
You're going to be evaluated.
So he goes to Betty Ford for 3 days to get evaluated, or for 4 days to get evaluated. And the evaluation comes back, you are not an alcoholic.
Yeah, that's not how that works, by the way. That's a claim from Bill Moose in a book. I have an extensive amount of experience dealing with people in my life and addiction. You don't go to that clinic, that one specifically.
Right.
Like, I've had friends get out of rehab. Yeah. You don't walk in and they go, all right, it's either going to flash red or green. You're an alcoholic in three,
right.
two,
no,
one.
The timing of this is the more interesting part, Ross. So, you mentioned that it was in his first year on the job, and he had not been on the job. He had not even been on the job 12 months at that point. So I'll take you back to the spring of 2018. So, because this happened in September 2018. Spring of 2018, I am trying to figure out some plans for the season. And I call the SID at Troy University, and I say, can you talk to your head football coach, Neil Brown, and ask him if it's possible that I can embed with you for Nebraska week this year? Because I think you're going to go beat Nebraska. And Troy was coming off beating LSU the previous year. They brought back almost everybody. Nebraska had a new coach, new staff, but they hadn't really upgraded the roster. And I was like, this seems like a pretty ripe spot for an upset. And so I was embedded with Troy that entire week. So I was in the bowels of Memorial Stadium for that Troy-Nebraska game. I was on the sidelines with Troy that game. And yeah, man, it was bad. And I remember I wanted to talk to Frost the following Monday. And you could tell it was, I didn't realize it was this bad. Mm-hmm. And apparently in another part of the building, all of that was going on with Bill Moose.
It was
maybe
that weekend?
That Monday.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Wow.
So that was wild.
Crazy.
Basically, and his thing was, look, you brought me here to you obviously hired me to hire Scott Frost. And now that Scott Frost has lost his first two games, because remember, the first game gets canceled because of lightning, the Akron game.
Mm-hmm.
Then they lose to Colorado. Then they lose to Troy. And at that point, the alarms are going off in the athletic department.
Are we just remembering some losses now? Because didn't they open up with consecutive season opening losses to Northwestern? One was abroad in Ireland, right?
Well, that was his last year. That was 2021.
was, okay. Well, then who was the coach when Georgia Southern upset him? Now we're just remembering Nebraska losses. This is what this segment is. Remember that time they sucked?
Georgia Southern, I believe, was his last one.
I think that's what got him. That's what got his.
Yeah. And then who they lose to? They lost to Northern Illinois under Riley.
Yeah,
that got the AD fired, which got Moose hired to then fire Mike Riley.
Big
and,
Red,
and hire
thanks
Scott
for
Frost.
Tuning in. By the way, we're just gonna pull the scab so all the way back now. Yeah, I'm and sure put a little battery acid.
The Nebraska fans but what I will excited to hear.
But what
about
I will
these.
Say is, it's not like. They're fine. They can be fine in the Big Ten. They can be fine in the Big Ten, no matter what anybody says. They just have to get football right. So that's up to Matt Rhule to do it, or they'll find somebody else to do it.
I think the takeaway here
is... They just gave him a big old new contract.
They did.
So what a shock. A college football coach earning an extension for no particular reason.
Yeah.
Here's what I would take away from this, if I'm any kind of power broker in the sport. Don't put the Nebraska context on this one. But what we're starting to see now emerge is honest admission from administrators that these moves are not made with benefit in mind, talking about conference realignment. And yet you
still
are
expecting... It's not for the benefit of the student athletes or whatever it is they said in the press release.
But it's not even the benefit. Yeah. But like what's interesting here is that Moose is saying that this didn't benefit the program. This was not a tactical move. I've been arguing about Oklahoma leaving... a cakewalk into the college football playoff in the Big 12 for years. I understand why they did it. I don't want to relitigate that. I understand how money works. And I understand that one pile of money is bigger than another. I get that. I don't need to go to business school. All right. But what's interesting in the takeaway here is that you still have to find a way to persist and survive and succeed, even though you are willingly entering into conference alignment that's actually negatively impactful. The money is going to supersede the priority to win. That is the takeaway here. And now they're saying it out loud.
Yeah.
Well, it's fascinating because this came out right as I was doing a bunch of NFL draft research, and I was going back to find what was the last year the SEC didn't have the biggest number of draft picks. It was actually 2004, and I went to figure out exactly what the breakdown was in 2004. And I'm having to look up who everybody's conference affiliation is because I couldn't remember there was a Big 12, and it had 12 teams, and it had Texas A&M and Missouri, but It was not the Big 12. It was the Big 10 that year, but only by a little bit. The Big East had a big number that year.
Yeah.
That was before Virginia Tech and Miami had moved. So it's crazy to remember how more evenly spread out the power and the money was before this era of consolidation.
Somewhere.
Imagine that. If we had that now, we'd probably have a bigger playoff. We'd have a lot of other things that would be good for the sport. But you
wouldn't have Cal playing
Duke and
softball.
You shouldn't have said no to Penn State when you had the chance.
So what I was saying, I was about to say somewhere Mike Trangisi just sat up in a chair and started screaming for no reason. Although he probably does that every day.
He has apparently told people, he's like, why does Andy always go back to the Penn State thing? Because it might have been the original sin of...
It would have helped. I mean, it would have helped because I don't know if Virginia Tech, I don't know if Miami.
Penn State goes
to
the Big East instead of going to the Big Ten.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Va Tech and Miami essentially cut the legs out from under it when I'm finishing journalism school and nobody takes them serious after that. Sorry, UConn.
Yeah.
Sorry, no escalators.
Yeah, because Big East football was actually.
Dude.
For a minute.
You want to remember something. Thursday night, Big East. Yeah. We did a whole episode of Phantom Island about this fall, about the ESPN priority towards Thursday night football shifting away because of the NFL. But there was a time, my kids, my young Gen Zers, where you would have number one or like number three versus number six. I'm talking West Virginia. I'm talking Rutgers. I'm talking Pitt. Help me out here, Andy. I'm talking Louisville. Like, I can't remember, but I'm still monologuing, okay? And you would have multiple top 10 games.
Miami Tech, Syracuse.
Yes.
Yeah.
Matt Ryan barfing on the sidelines in a comeback win. Like, I think that was an ACC game, actually. But my point is, like, Thursday night ESPN college football used to mean something in this country, damn it. And it was mainly the Big East. Rutgers meant something.
Then the NFL put games on Thursday again.
Yeah, we all had to watch the Jags beat the Texans 9-6.
All right, that's enough literary corner. That's the College Football Inquirer book club has closed.
Are you
going
to finish the book?
Yeah.
Yes.
You're going to read now the whole thing.
I need to go back to the beginning because he dropped some nuggets in there at the end,
Andy, it's
about his early life that
yeah,
I have
like,
got
what?
To know about.
Did he find a body? Is this like a, like I mean, what is going on for 400?
There's
of these
a mention
pages?
Of a 12 gauge to the face.
Oh wow!
You want to get
what
him?
A life?
Let's get him on the show.
Huh?
Let's get him on the show. He's probably
not
doing anything
a bad
else.
Idea.
Where does he live right now? Eastern Washington? Did he retire there?
I believe he's in Washington State.
Well, let's go. Yeah. I'll be up there. Yeah, come on.
All right. That's my mandate.
We're going
go,
crabbing.
Go book that guest.
We're going. What is the title again? Because the title needs an editor too.
The title's yeah, it's long.
Leave the poor guy alone. He just wrote a 697 page book, Crab Creek Chronicles, from the wheat fields to the ball fields and beyond.
Nope, too much.
What's the who? What is Crab Creek?
It's something to do.
I think that's where it's from.
Yeah, it's something to do
oh,
up there.
Okay,
it's like a yep. like a thing. I guess they got creeks with crabs in them.
I got to read the beginning of the book. I read the Washington State Nebraska part. The part about his interview with Mike Leach and Key West is also spectacular. By the way, it's everything you would imagine a job interview with Mike Leach would be.
Mm. Yeah.
Like he's talking about sure. Geronimo in the first hour, and Bill Moose has not been able to get a word in edgewise, and they've not talked about yeah. football. And Bill Moose is like, "What is going to happen here? What is going
did,
on?"
Did it mention about the, you know, Mike Leach like riding the bike? Because I know other ADs who've gone down there, right? If they were like waiting at a bar for Mike Leach, like when is he mm-hmm. going to show up? Of course,
he shows
late.
Up on a bike, yeah.
And then they hear like, you know, yeah. ding ding ding, tick 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 tick, and they.
Oh, Mike Leach very much rode his bike to the interview. Yeah. He wore flip-flops, which...
Flip-flops, t-shirt, yeah, hat.
Mike Leach's
yeah.
flip-flops got Randy Edsel hired at Maryland, by the way. Because he would have gotten the job otherwise. Oh.
Put that on a coffee mug.
Absolutely. Well, he liked his coffee out of a white styrofoam cup. Black coffee. He hated the taste.
Leach or Edsel?
Leach.
Maybe with some Crown in it.
Exactly.
It's funny because he gave birth to, not literally, but his tree birthed so many Red Bull bros. But he never really messed
not
with
him.
Red Bull.
Black coffee.
Yeah. I think, I honestly think it's because he spent time, like, I mean, he went to BYU and, you know, he wasn't a drinker, right? Like, or he wasn't a drinker early on, I think. Like, yeah, it's a fascinating man. Also, everyone now realizes that he would filibuster on all those weird things because he just didn't want to answer particular questions, right? Like, we all
correct.
Realized that was the whole
yeah,
shtick.
We,
yeah.
We knew it was happening. We knew when it was happening.
The beat writers would get pissed when national sure. guys would show up and they'd be like, say something funny, Mike. And then he'd go, like, I did that mm-hmm. on accident at Pac-12 one year. And he did like 19 minutes on Valdosta and Nats and this whole deal. And the guy next to me was like, look, they've had people arrested. Will you shut up for 1 second? I've got to get a quote from him. And I'm over there just like, man, isn't it crazy in South Georgia? And he loves
that. Rest in peace, Mike Leach. When we come back, we head to the league that Mike Leach once coached in, the Pac-12, which looks very different now. They all have a very different schedule in 2026, along with a new lineup. And they have an idea that everybody needs to steal.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be right back. We're back at the College Football Inquirer and Pac-12 news. Yes, the Pac-12 is back from the dead. Washington State and Oregon State would tell you it never died. It never. They were keeping it warm. But now they've been joined by Boise State, Utah State, Colorado State, Texas State, San Diego State, Fresno State, all joining the Pac-12.
State.
And
they're all named State.
Did you miss one?
No, they're all named State. I know that.
I think I got them all as eight, right?
Utah,
Oregon State, Washington State,
Utah
San Diego State,
State
missed, Fresno missed, State, Texas yeah. State, Colorado State, Boise State, Utah State.
Yeah.
Utah State.
They're all
yeah,
named
I
State.
Yeah, the state, this the state league,
Pac State.
The Pac-12 is back, baby, with a new schedule lineup with a little bit of a twist. We've talked for a long time about conferences should do something different at the end of the season. I don't know if this is probably going to be different enough for some people, but they've decided to do what they're calling a flex week at the end of the regular season. So the last week of the regular season. They will have four rematches of games earlier on in the season that are chosen by the conference 6 days prior to the games being played. Now they've sort of predetermined some of the matchups, but they've They can adjust them.
They have a home pool and a road pool, essentially, is what it looks like to me. Because it says that these are the ones they've projected, which would be Boise State at Utah State, Texas State at Colorado State, San Diego State at Fresno State, Oregon State at Washington State. My guess is, as they basically told Utah State, Colorado State, Fresno State, Washington State, you're playing at home that week. They've told Boise State, Texas State, San Diego State, Oregon State, you're on the road that week. And
So you can't, the home teams obviously can't play one another. So you've only got a few matchups there. And then they've predetermined these matchups. But depending on how the season goes, they could readjust sort of the matchups if they need to. I mean, basically, let's kind of boil it down here. Like, they have 8 football playing members. They really needed a 9th football playing member to play 8 conference games, which mm-hmm. they wanted to do.
Notre Dame.
They only got 7 conference games. So this is kind of a creative way to play an 8 conference game that doesn't count in the standings. Actually, these games won't count in the standings. So after the second to last regular season week, the two best teams will play 2 weeks later in the conference championship game before they have this sort of flex week. They looked at a lot of other ways, though, to do this that were a little more aggressive and fun. I kind of wish they did some of these other things.
Like what?
Including doing the old one plays four, like play-in games to the championship mm-hmm. game. One plays 4, 2 plays 3, like almost semifinals, your own
sort of
that'd conference tournament.
That probably
would
have been better.
Or 1 versus 8, 2 versus 7, you know, whatever. I kind of wish they did that, but they didn't go that far to these play-in games yet. Instead, they just basically did rematches that can change, if a week before the games are actually played, in a week before or 2 weeks before the actually championship game. And the championship game will be at, it won't be on a neutral site, so it'll be at the home side of the top seed.
So here's what I like about this, though. It does add some flexibility. And I love that they just say straight up in their press release, the Pac-12 retain the right to adjust matchups based on the best interest of the league. Like, I like that they're just saying that. We're just trying to put our teams in the best possible position.
Yes.
But how much fun would this be if you had a list like this of the home pool is Michigan, Penn State, Michigan State, Wisconsin, Iowa, USC, and Oregon, and the road pool is this and this and this. That would be fun.
The reason why you should pay attention to this, if you don't care about those teams, or if we asked you right now to stop the podcast and say, all right, what were those 8 teams that we told you about? You probably can't remember. We are not here to talk about the Pac-12. If this succeeds and basically just gets a team into the college football playoff, by manipulation of the schedule to bolster a single team's resume. And by the way, Andy, I too enjoy the sort of like front street honesty of the league being like, we're going to gimmick this up, dude. This is pro wrestling. We're going to make it like, we're just going to find a way to jam. If Team X has a chance.
Story, cause this idea actually springs from what the Big Ten tried to do in the 2020 season. They tried to do this. Most of the games didn't get played because of COVID.
Right.
One game that did get played was Nebraska-Rutgers, but Scott Frost didn't want to go to Rutgers, and Bill Moose was like, I just spent 3 months trying to get you a football season. By God, you're going to Rutgers.
Yeah.
We'll turn this whole car around.
By the way, our producer, TJ, asked about a good question. Will this continue like in 2027 and beyond if they add another team, which was the goal, right? They wanted to add another football playing member. I don't believe so. Right, that this could be a 1 year thing.
I'll raise my hand.
They add, and
the answer to this is, will it continue? And or the question is, will it continue? The answer is, if it works.
Yeah.
If they add another team, though, they'll have obviously 9 football playing
yeah,
members,
you can't
so
do
they'll
it
be
nine.
Able
you have
play
to
play 8 conference
number.
Games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right. So the way to look at this is, if they, it's less about the format they're announcing, because it sounds like, again, with their transparency of intent, that they're just trying to bolster the resume of their best or one or two best couple playoff eligible teams. If they are successful in this, the reason why this is important is that college football is foundationally built on imitation. And don't doubt for a second that you won't see this happen somewhere else. And the reason why this is important is because this is the first time we've seen like naked transparency about we are going to affect our regular season scheduling solely for the intent of making the playoff.
And it's also an admission that you don't have to schedule a game 10 years in advance.
Yeah.
To have it.
Yeah.
Turns out right. As long as
somebody knows they are hosting a game on a particular day, and somebody knows they're going on the road on a particular day,
mm-hmm.
you can make that matchup within a week.
Of all the things, Andy, that happened in COVID that I thought might actually carry over back when we became a normal functioning society again, was the ability to, in 10-ish, 9-ish, and sometimes less days, pull together a football game. By the way, we saw this happen. It was BYU and Coastal Carolina playing each other.
Mm-hmm.
And College Game Day.
Mm-hmm. On 3 days' notice.
Yes.
Okay, producer TJ has another really good question. And here's where I will again attempt to predict the future. TJ says, so would you move Rivalry Week off of Thanksgiving weekend? Here's what I would do with that. If, let's say, you made week zero, week one.
Here we go.
If you were trying to move the calendar so that you don't have to end the season on January 25th, if you're trying to move the calendar a week earlier, and so you would have to move those rivalry games and therefore move championship weekend, well, create something super fun that replaces championship weekend that has games that are kind of irrelevant now with this in the SEC, in the Big Ten, in the ACC, in the Big 12.
I'm trying to think who would clutch pearls first. All of them. Yeah, probably. Probably.
But everybody clutches pearls until they get the fun thing on TV.
The shortest way to understand this is that this could catapult Boise over an American team in the near future, get them in the playoff, and then for it to really take hold, I think then Boise might have to actually beat some sort of power team. And that's it. Then people will start to take notice of this. By the way, this is all an intelligent response to the ACC guys.
This, you know, something this ties into the situation with the CFP, which I don't know if we discussed or not. Chris Vanini of The Athletic sort of unearthed it from the MOU, the CFP MOU, about how not, the G5, the G6 automatic spot in the playoff going forward will be the highest ranked G6 program, not necessarily the highest ranked conference champion G6 program. Now, here's the thing. It's possible this is going to be a moot discussion because they're going to end up changing that language, I have a feeling, back to a conference champion, because most, I think, of the group of six leaders want their conference championship game to have more value. In order to have more value, you need it to have a stake in a pathway to the CFP. But what it opens up is, as Godfrey was talking about, like in this flex week, do you want to give, say let's just use an example. It's Boise, and Boise is 11-1, and they're the top ranked group of six, or they're 10-1, I guess, a top ranked group of six program. They're on the path toward getting a CFP bid. On the flex week, Do you throw Boise a bone and give them an easy game to make sure they don't lose? Because this game, this flex week game, doesn't count toward the conference standing. So they're going to be in the championship game no matter what.
I think it depends, Ross, what Boise needs.
Yeah.
Is Boise behind, North Dakota State or Tulane? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And do they need to jump up? In that case, you give them the tougher game.
Yes.
If they are in the catbird seat, trying to hold on to it, you give them the easier.
Yeah, but Andy also, but keep in mind, Andy, I've been watching a lot of curling, so it's also about blocking your opponent's offense.
I love curling.
So let's say curling. Boise's the highest ranked in this situation, but Tulane and Memphis, or, South Florida and Memphis, whatever it's going to be, they're about to play each other in the American, a week or two from now. And so it may be like 20 versus 25, and maybe Boise's up here at 17, but the winner could catapult. So I think it really would have to be a short turnaround of decision making by, you know, the Pac-12
they
in
said
this case.
6 days. They can do it within six days.
Yeah. And then they trot out the best possible opponent to then bolster the Boise resume.
It changes everything if the CFP doesn't change the language and leaves it as the highest ranked G6 and not necessarily the conference champion. I wonder.
Well, you're still trying to get the highest ranking regardless of that. So either way, like if it requires the champion, the fact that it doesn't count in the conference standings is kind of irrelevant here.
Well, we're also assuming that the rubric we're talking about will stay in place. And so far we haven't seen that happen at all.
That's another.
No. The CFP could also react off of this. And you're talking about pearl clutching. It might be them. It might be the old folks at the Disney Invitational that say, no, we don't want this. And we'll find a way to make it punitive.
I just think this would give, because we've read the tea leaves enough to think, okay, they're probably going to try to move the whole season, which moves rivalry week into that third week in November, which would put championship week on Thanksgiving weekend. We already know championship week is waning in terms of relevance because of the expanded playoff.
That's going to end up turning a new concept game weekend.
Right? Yeah, you need a new concept for that week, whether it's Thanksgiving week or the following week. You need a new concept.
Yeah. And this is the concept. It's going to be like everybody's going to either have a flex week or everybody's going to have their own play-in games. Everybody's going to have the first round of the playoff where they have play-in games against another league. Like that's what's going to end up happening to the conference championship games.
The hysterics around this could be not muted, but toned down. As long as you are protecting core games within big conference schedules, so this isn't happening at the expense of traditional rivals. Real rivals, by the way. Not your third rival. Okay? I'm looking at you, SEC schools. I'm talking about your actual rivals. All right? Then I think everyone would embrace this because it essentially ramps up into the hunt and what's meaningful as we move towards what will undoubtedly be some form of an expanded playoff.
You're exactly right. And we will find out. We'll see how this one works, and everybody will cheat off their paper, and could be fun. But when we come back, our Ross Dellinger has dropped another banger. Here's the headline. How athletic departments are blowing past the revenue share salary cap. We'll talk about it when we come back. We are back at the College Football Inquirer, and our man Ross Dellinger has dropped another great story. The headline to his On3 Sports Business column this week, how athletic departments are blowing past the revenue share cap. And it takes us inside, especially Texas Tech with Kirby Hokut, their athletic director, and how Texas Tech, which spent a lot of money last year and won the Big 12 and made the playoff, they spent more than the $20.5 million that was allowed. There will be $21.3 million allowed this year. But Ross, please tell us why and how the best programs will be spending significantly more than that.
Yeah, like, you know, we're obviously in year one of the house settlement rev share concept, and year two begins on July 1. And some new things. Before I get into Texas Tech situation, like some new things that you should know, everybody should know about what year two will look like. You know, the number 20.5 million is the rev share cap for year one, and it'll go up by 800,000. It's an automatic 4% increase to 21.3 million, like you said, Andy. So that's one thing that's sort of new about the year two cap. Another thing is schools will have, and this gets really complicated, so I'm not going to get into it too deeply, but schools will have an additional $2.5 million, not in addition to the 21.3. It's part of the 21.3, but basically this year, schools that there was a requirement that if you offered additional scholarships, then that money had to be reduced from your cap, from your pool. That won't be the case next year. So you kind of freeze up a little more money. So the bottom line is schools will have 21.3 million next year to spend in revenue share. And we're going to do this, I'll explain this by buckets. That's one bucket, because that's how Kirby Hokut, the Texas Tech athletic director talked to donors about this Tuesday. He kind of took donors into how Texas Tech plans to attack year two of the cap. And it's really fascinating, and kudos to him. He's really honest. He sort of just kind of puts it all out there about how they're spending and what they're doing. So you kind of split it up into buckets. All right, so bucket one is that $21.3 million in revenue share. Bucket two is sort of additional scholarships. Now that they don't count against your revenue share cap, you're going to see even a lot more schools, including Texas Tech, offer the Olympic sports additional scholarships, mostly the Olympic sports. They're offering 80 more scholarships that are worth a value of $2.5 million.
I was told that paying players would eliminate opportunities in women's and Olympic sports, Ross.
Not so much, Andy. At least would
they,
not in
were
the
they lying to
level.
Us to keep there may from be paying a little players?
Did TV lie to me?
There may be. Yeah. Yeah. So you got bucket one, the 2.1.3 million ref share. Bucket two is new additional scholarships. And then there's the fun bucket three and four. In bucket three, Kirby Hocutt told publicly these group of donors that they are going to redirect up to $10 million of sponsorship, Adidas apparel brand money through their multimedia rights from the athletic department to the roster. And then there's bucket four, the final bucket, which is sort of any other NIL unaffiliated with the school deals in sort of NIL events that sort of happen. And he sort of went into detail about this event that they're planning where Texas Tech basketball players will coach in a sort of fantasy team for fans who want to, like a camp, I guess, who want to participate.
Fun.
And it'll be sponsored, and that sponsorship money will go to the players through NIL deals. You total all the buckets up, Andy, and you'll end up getting between $35 and $40 million. And Kirby Hocutt told the donors, this is what Texas Tech has to do to stay competitive for the college football playoff in the Final Four. And so that's your real cap, right? We're able in year two now to see what is the real cap? Mm-hmm. And it's going to be about $40 million, probably 30-ish to football and another 8 to 10 or so to men's basketball.
And so they've talked about, quote unquote, legitimate NIL. I would argue that using your Adidas deal or your Nike deal or whatever your apparel deal is legitimate NIL because Adidas and Nike are paying you to advertise them. How you decide to use the money that they're paying to advertise them is your own business. And they've always used the players as billboards for those apparel companies.
Yeah, but they were getting an education.
And now they're getting an even better education.
Okay, so just going to ask the layman's question here. So this is the real cap, but it does not include third-party NIL, right?
No, the third party NIL is the bucket three and four. That's what's
sort of baked in.
$10 million, and then you can still
go out and get a tractor dealership if you need.
But yeah. If more NIL were to come in, that can't actually be capped, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. No. Yeah. There's no real cap. There's really no real cap at all.
Okay. Just a soft cap.
Yeah. System,
I'm going to ask that question every time this news develops because
right. So, but yeah. What I guess what Kirby was getting at with the donors was. There may be an unlimited cap because there's no stopping NIL deals. But here's what you need to get to to compete in the recruiting,
which is
use your $21.3 million in rev share, give $2.5 million in additional scholarships, redirect at least $8 to $10 million from your corporate sponsors, and then the fourth bucket is sort of what you're talking about, Godfrey. That's like the unlimited bucket, but you at least need $5 to $7 million. From that bucket of events or other NIL, and you add it all up together, and you got.
So the news here, Ross, if I'm hearing this correctly, is actually we're not talking about caps. We're talking about floors. I think that what's interesting here is that what Kirby's really telling
what MLB is headed toward.
That's exactly right. It's the best comparison.
Yeah, what Kirby's telling Texas Tech and the world is, it's not the limit. This is the cover to get in the bar. This is what it's at. If you're going to be legitimate and you're going to be perennial, this is what it actually takes. How much of this you get from X, Y, or Z is up to you. Some of it's going to be TV revenue. Some of it's going to have to be other ways. But this is how much it costs to actually play.
Right. And we know that during this coaching cycle, we talked about this a lot. You know, coaches were promised, you know, a certain amount in budget for their football roster. And that amount, you know, has been pretty public. It's between 25 and 30 million. Some of these programs we saw at Florida with John Summerall and LSU with Lane Kiffin and Kalani Sitake at BYU it's 25 to 30 million for football. And the $40 million number is obviously more than that because it includes all the rest of the sports. Specifically
Texas Tech is a
basketball.
Very competitive basketball program too. They would like them to keep being competitive.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And this, which is fascinating, this camp, this basketball camp they plan on putting together in the summer that will have men's basketball players coaching the camp. You know, Kirby's hoping to get $4 to $5 million in sponsorship money. And this is, it's kind of like similar to what Auburn did with the football game, moving the football game from Auburn to Atlanta to a neutral site. And it was supposed to generate around $4 or $5 million. And that money is supposed to be going to players in NIL deals through this sort of event. So you can keep on doing these things, right? But you need to, you know, it seems to me football roster needs to be in between 25 and 30 million and the basketball roster needs to be probably in between 8 and 10 to 12 million to be competitive at the top, what, 15?
Yeah.
Top 20.
Right. And Texas Tech put itself in that group after not being in that group for a long time. Texas Tech put itself in that group last year. Now, it didn't score him a single point in the Orange Bowl.
Got to have a quarterback, turns out. The guy who does this, and then he does the forward pass, you got to do one of those, okay? You got to get that. That's advanced analysis. PFF, call me. I'm available.
But they went out and got Brendan Sorsby, so that they're hoping that the points problem is now taken care of and that they also still have a really good defense. It worked.
Now, here's the deal, and I wrote this in the story, is that people probably hear like, wow, you know, $40 million is double the actual cap, right? How are all these deals going to get through the College Sports Commission's NIL Go clearinghouse? Well, they're not.
Lawyers.
And that's going to be something that we'll have a lot of fun with on the pod later this spring and summer. When these deals start getting rejected
over the range of
compensation.
In the state of Texas led the charge to have the Texas Attorney General tell all the schools in the state of Texas not to sign the CSC
That would be a one Texas Tech in Lubbock, who's general counsel, right, in prominent chair and booster Cody Campbell, publicly denounced the school from signing the deal, and then the Texas Attorney General, along with seven other attorney generals, got involved. And I'm glad you brought up the CSC participation agreement because, Andy, newsflash, it still hasn't been signed, and I don't think it will be signed, which means that perhaps the only punishment and enforcement that, at least for now, may come from the CSC will come through rejected NIL Go clearinghouse deals. And if your deal is rejected, it goes to sort of a court-overseen arbitration process. And if the arbitrator rejects it as well, then guess what's going to happen?
I always wondered what...
And guess what's going to happen if you tell Adidas that their deal is void with a player at a
Adidas is
going to
sue.
Guess how that's going to go.
I was always curious what it was like.
Yeah, the business player in school will potentially all... sue, and that's what we're going to see in the spring, summer.
And this is what when ADs would argue with me about this before the House settlement was finalized. Well, they'd say, but the players have agreed to it by taking the money. They agree to the settlement. I'm like, I know, but the companies didn't agree to it, and the state governments didn't agree to it. There's still people who can sue you, and this was mystifying to some people.
I always wondered what it was like to live in Russia after the fall of communism. I was always, you know, like talking about interesting points of history, like after the wall fell and after, you know, communism died in Russia and the flood of unmonitored capitalism came rushing in and there was absolutely no way of governing it. And that's what we're living in now in college sports.
Are you calling somebody an oligarch?
I would never. You know the first thing that happened in Russia after, you know the first thing they did after they fell, after the sickle was down? Had a Metallica concert. Would you just have big Metallica
concert? Nothing wrong with that.
Nah, damn right.
As someone who paid to go to a Metallica concert last summer, that is capitalism at its finest, right?
Yeah, it is. Thanks, Ross.
Shout out Raymond James Stadium for having somewhere to buy beer every 6 feet.
Hell yeah.
At the Metallica concert.
Yeah, the Falcons don't do a lot right, but the Mercedes-Benz Stadium, you stay lubricated. Thanks, Ross. It sounds like everything's going to be totally fine, well-organized,
yeah,
and completely
it's going
explainable.
Things are going well. Swimmingly. Yeah, swimmingly.
Yes. But is it... Okay, right. I'm going to play the role of the founder of this here show, Dan Wetzel.
Mm.
Is it really that bad?
I thought you were going to start talking
Who's
about Miller Lite. I think it
seems like a lot of people are getting a lot of money.
Oh, no. It's just a lot of...
Well, the schools...
Go ahead.
The schools that probably don't have the corporate sponsor money, like, you know, Kirby's talking about $10 million to redirect. Yeah, mm-hmm. The schools don't really have the resources of that. They would say they're being harmed.
They should stop being poor.
Andy, I have one. I have one.
No, but like, Texas Tech was a have not. Like,
well, but also then there's other schools, maybe all the schools at this point, saying, well, this is all dumb. We should just collectively bargain and make them employees.
Coastal Carolina doesn't sit on an oil patch. There's a big difference. The thing that yeah. actually bothers
they
me.
They sit on an airbrush patch.
Damn right they do. What bothers me is that I'm going to, oof, man, I'm going to deny I said this, even though I'm saying it on television right now. I'm going to have to loosen the grip on the group of five or six, whatever the hell we're going to call it, because I'm privy to specific NIL numbers at a couple of these schools. And what Ross just said out loud and what those schools are going to enter into the 2026 season with numerically, guys,
yeah,
we have long eclipsed the concept of playing the same sport.
Did y'all see the Mr. Beast thing last week?
No, I did not, Andy. Let me ask my 8-year-old.
For those who don't, Mr. Beast is maybe the biggest YouTube star in the world. He does all these crazy stunts. It's here's $5 million in cash, and we're going to have people climb a mountain of cash. Like, that's the sort of thing he does. Someone asked him, because he's based in North Carolina, I believe in Eastern North Carolina. And somebody asked him on Instagram, would Mr. Beast donate $100 million and win ECU a national championship? East Carolina University, a national championship. He said to his fans on his Instagram story, should I do this? Question mark. Now, I saw that and immediately chuckled because $100 million donation one time is not going to get East Carolina a national championship. Yeah. You're gonna need like a billion.
No, not a. I don't know. Actually, damn it. All right, TJ, I'll do it. I think $100 million could get you more than you think in one season. 97 Florida Marlins.
Oh no! They were talking about, you know, as sort of an endowment situation, not as a one
to the school. No, don't give the damn school money. They're gonna spend it on books.
No, to
and
the athletic
professors.
Department, to the football program.
Yeah. We don't want it spent on academics. This is America. I think 100 could do more than you think. I mean, they're already an American
school.
So if
you treated it as, say, like a 3-year endowment.
I mean, do we want to... Oh, man. All right. You got my Bagman brain going now.
Tuesday show. Can Mr. Beast...
I don't want to talk about Mr. Beast.
Lead
Tuesday,
East Bagman. Carolina to a national title. Tuesday show. Who says no?
God, I hate YouTube.
We'll talk to you Tuesday. Now we know what we're going to talk about. Also, by the way, also, we may have results of the Trinidad Shambles and Joey Aguilar hearings as they seek injunctions trying to play another year of college football. So we may know whether or not they can actually do that.
Hey, kids, go to law school.
About that.
Go to law school.
Billable hours.
A lot
undefeated.
Of money. Go to law school.
And possibly Mr. Beast undefeated. We'll find out. We'll talk to you on Tuesday.